Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are, anything your heart desires will come to you.
And it's great to be back. This is Mike Schwager for another edition of the Enrichment Hour. I send my greetings and my love to all of my listeners and hopefully new listeners from all over the world. And it's my great pleasure and honor to introduce Duane Elgin. Duane, are you there?
Mike, I'm here, and it's my pleasure and honor to be here with you.
Duane, thank you so much. I am so glad I finally was able to put this together. And I want you to know that I really honor who you are, Duane. And we're going to talk about your work and your ideas. Duane is an internationally recognized speaker, author, esteemed futurist and social visionary, and he looks beneath the surface turbulence of our times to explore the deeper trends that are transforming our world. And I'm about to read, Duane, copy from your own website, because nobody gets it better than the author himself. So I'm just going to read a little bit about you to introduce you to our listeners. In 2005, Duane received the Japanese Goi International Peace Award in recognition of his contribution to a global vision, consciousness, and lifestyle that fosters a more sustainable and spiritual culture. Duane's books include The Living Universe, Where Are We, Who Are We, Where Are We Going? That's 2009. Promise Ahead, A Vision of Hope and Action for Humanity's Future. That was 2000. A wonderful book that has received many accolades. Voluntary Simplicity. That's Voluntary Simplicity Toward a Way of Life That is Outwardly Simple and Inwardly Rich. That was 1993. And 81. Is that correct, Duane?
It was just republished this year, 2010.
That's it.
Yeah.
2010, just republished.
And
Awakening Earth, that's the first book of yours that I read, Duane. I loved it. Awakening Earth, Exploring the Evolution of Human Culture and Consciousness, 1993. With Joseph Campbell and other scholars, he co-authored the book Changing Images of Man, 1982, and in addition, Duane has contributed chapters to 16 books and has published more than 70 articles. And in the early 1970s, he worked as a senior staff member of a joint presidential congressional commission on the American future. He then worked as a senior social scientist with the think tank SRI International, where he co-authored numerous long-range future studies such as Anticipating Future National and Global Problems, and that was for the President's Science Advisory Committee. There is more to your bio, but if I read the whole thing, our hour will be up, Duane. So wonderful to have you aboard, Duane. Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you,
you know, I'm remembering I used to live in Manhattan, and I lived in Soho, just below Greenwich Village, and my home, my apartment was on Prince Street in Soho, and I walked a few blocks to work on Avenue of the Americas. One day, and this was, Duane, in the early 90s, I was walking down a Soho street, and it was quite a normal walk, and I just looked up at the sky a little bit, and I had a moment. It was an extraordinary experience. I looked up at the sky, and I can't exactly describe. It was partially visual and partially audible. It was a message, and what I heard and saw was that the world is converging now, and it is time for dialogue between the apparent opposites, dialogue between the genders and the races and the cultures and the religions, etc. It was very intense, Duane, this experience, and it seemed not to come at all from my ego. It seemed to be coming from, lack of a better phrase, divine mind, you know.
Right.
And then there was a secondary message that it is now time for human potential to be fulfilled. I became so excited that I wrote a business plan for what I call the Enrichment Channel. It never aired yet, but there is a website, enrichment.com, which actually now I'm about to put into another level of development. But do you think that this was a true message, a true universal message as to, in part, what is happening now?
Well, I indeed do. I feel there is this ecology of consciousness, a divine field, as I think you were suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's infused with a knowledge about how to live in a more humane and compassionate and indeed satisfying way on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sounded to me like you were just taken beyond your ego experience and into
right.
this place of reconciliation and then communion. And
yes.
And I think that is the foundation for a future of hope for the human race.
Yes, yes. You know, Duane, I think I mentioned to you before airtime that the first book that I read that got me terribly excited was Teilhard de Chardin's The Phenomenon of Man.
Yeah.
And what excited me when I read this book for the first time was that, it was exhilarating for me. I was so happy to discover, whether I agreed with every belief mindset or not, that he seemed to be bridging science and spirituality. And he talked about the rise of the geosphere, the biosphere, the noosphere, which is the human community, towards an ultimate omega point. There was something about the deeper spirituality of his writing that really reached me. And it was such a message, I thought, and still think, of hope. And along comes Duane Elgin and writes these incredible books, which seem to amplify that sense of hope and purpose in human existence. Had you been influenced at all by Teilhard, just out of curiosity, Duane?
Oh, certainly. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You bet. You don't read Teilhard de Chardin without getting a little jolt, a little juice
yeah.
from
right.
the real thing. It wasn't just that he was a scientist, which indeed he was, and it wasn't just that he was a spiritual person or a religious person, and indeed he was. It was that he, and these were writings that were published after his death. He wasn't trying to be.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he did not want to be. The point is, this is beyond his ego, and
yeah.
So this comes deep within. And so, if you really read his work, you really get a feeling for the authenticity of his.
Oh
message.
Yes, absolutely. I really loved The Divine Milieu. I thought it was profound, and it really opened my heart. And also, I had such admiration for this person. Who is this person, you know? I mean, just an amazing, mystical man of great
yeah.
intellectual depth and great heart, you know?
Yeah.
The question, I guess, to start off this conversation is, with all of the research, all of the work, all of the heart that you have put into your books, so who are we, Duane? You know, what are we doing here, and where do you think we're going?
Oh, well...
That's a small question, right?
yeah. What are we doing here? Where are we going? We are creatures of a living universe. The universe is, in my estimation, and that of, as I understand it, the world's wisdom traditions. We are creatures of a living universe, and we're trying to learn how to live in a living universe.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. That's what's going on here. We're trying to discover the aliveness inside of ourselves. As we do that, we discover the aliveness in the universe. We come to a sacred regard for the universe. We come to a sacred regard for one another, and treat one another with more compassion and interest, curiosity, playfulness. We come to a sacred regard for the earth. We no longer just mindlessly exploit it. We try to care for it and nurture it back to health. But at the foundation of it all is the simplicity of discovering the aliveness in ourselves and how it connects with the aliveness of a living universe.
Yes, yes, indeed. A study was published, which I'm sure you're aware, that purports to prove the theory that humans evolved from a single origin somewhere in sub-Saharan Africa. Do you feel, Duane, that is right?
Well, you see, this is a based on genetics,
mm-hmm.
And so it's neutral. It doesn't genetics doesn't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat.
Right, exactly.
It says here's your genetic code, and here's what it tells about who you are, irrespective of your point of view. And genetics says that this is quite extraordinary. That, for example, if you went into an African forest, found a tribe of chimps, of 30, 40, 50 chimps,
right,
looked at the diversity of genetic material within that tribe, the diversity genetically within that small tribe of chimps is greater than the diversity within the entirety of the human family. And what that means is that not only are we related, not only are we cousins, we came essentially from a single tribe in Africa.
Right.
It is estimated roughly 72,000 years ago with the what's called the Mount Toba catastrophe, this enormous supervolcano that blows up in Indonesia, causes a short-term essential global winter, kills off much of the life around the Earth for a short period of time, and there's a tribe apparently in Africa of just a few thousand people that does not only survive, but in perhaps those harsh conditions, come to a place of reflective intelligence sufficient that they then migrate out of Africa rapidly around the rest of the world, effectively, in geological time, about 65,000 years ago, and then populate the entire Earth. So I think this is an extraordinary dynamic of evolution. And just to conclude this, it's long-winded. I find amazing is that we were almost extinct 72,000 years ago. The human race, or this part of it, almost went extinct. There was just a small tribe in Africa that managed to survive, and out of those few thousand people, here we are now, just overwhelming the Earth from a small tribe to now a tribe of 7 billion people.
Amazing. So, by the way, the near extinction was caused by what? That volcano?
Yes, it was the Mount Toba eruption.
Mm-hmm.
And
I see.
There are volcanoes that happen regularly, but then there are what are called super volcanoes.
Right.
And this is where it is just vastly larger than the regular volcanoes, and it creates a volcanic ash that surrounds the Earth, blocks out the sun, and with that causes rapid cooling of the Earth, die off of vegetation. The large animals that rely upon that vegetation don't have any food to eat. They die off, and the whole food chain collapses.
Wow, amazing. I remember once we were talking just before airtime about your friend Barbara Marx Hubbard, a great futurist.
Yes.
I remember Barbara once said to me and a small group of people, humankind is only at the birthing stage right now. And I know you write in your book about a series of different stages, but I think she actually said we're at the birthing stage, we've come out of the womb, but we are far less mature than we may think we are, and that we are going to become candidates for entry into the cosmic club. I guess that implied superior intelligence out there, but we're not quite there yet, although we may be being monitored or screened. How do you feel about that idea, Duane?
Well, I think there are different ways of looking at the life stage of the human family, and from mm-hmm. first perspective of saying at some point we are going to be mature enough to be participants in the cosmic club, as you put it, and maybe interact with other civilizations and such. I think it's right. Yeah, we're just at the birth stage of that kind of dynamic because we're just now beginning with our space technology to reach into space. So mm-hmm. from that point of view, I think that metaphor completely makes sense. And I take a somewhat different view of the life stage of the human family, and I say before we go out and join the cosmic club,
out into the wild blue yonder,
is it possible we'll join the human club?
You know,
the family, human family club. And say, you know, we've been fighting one another here for 20,000-30,000 years. Can we kind of come together and say, you know, it's a small world. Let's work together. And
that's right.
And if we didn't spend all this enormous amount of money on weapons, no kidding, it would be phenomenal. The world we could create for ourselves if we spent it on improving our lives and creating homes and bridges and roads.
To me, it's just almost unbelievable that we haven't grown up yet. I want to quote from something from your book, which just reflects what you've just said. Our supreme test is to grow consciously into this new world and learn to live in balance with the earth, in peace with one another, and in gratitude with the living universe. Further along, you talk about different stages of species, a maturing species, a heroic species, a witnessing species, a cosmic species. Is that cosmic species, you think, Duane, where we are ultimately headed if we don't destroy ourselves?
Oh, I think we are, not only are we ultimately headed there, we are discovering that right now. That in fact, mm-hmm. We are embedded within the fabric of the universe, whose nature we're just beginning to discover. An analogy: a fish swims in water for millions of years, but does it understand the physics of water? The mm-hmm. water has very, very unique physics and properties that allow it to be what it is. Mm-hmm. And just because you swim in it for a million years doesn't mean you understand the physics of water.
Mm-hmm.
So here we humans have been swimming in the fabric of space-time
mm-hmm.
for millions of years. It doesn't mean we understand it. We're just inside of it. And so what is now happening is that we are beginning to use the powerful tools of science to begin to inspect the, let's say, the context, the fabric of space-time, the structure of reality within which we're immersed. And that dynamic is beginning to, this is a long-winded way of getting back to your question,
right,
that we are biocosmic, that we are not separate from the cosmos. The physics says it's a non-local universe. It means what happens on the other side of the universe is directly implicated and relevant to what's happening here. The universe is a unified whole. So we are, like it or not, whether we recognize it or not, it's already we are bio-cosmic. are biological beings engaged in, involved in the cosmos. That's how it's working.
Dwayne, do you think we've yet reached a quote-unquote critical mass in the population of the Earth that recognizes the need for unification, the need for cooperation and reconciliation, and because I assume if this critical mass has been achieved already, or if we're on the verge of it, lots of things will change rapidly, hopefully for the better. What's your opinion?
See, I think we're actually coming close to critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
And I can give you some very specific data in support of that. That's very heartening, and it's data based upon countless studies that have been aggregated, put together. So it isn't like one survey. This is an aggregation of many, many different surveys looking at college freshmen over the last, the adult population over the last, since 1962, actually. And in 1962, 22% of the adult population said they had had a powerful mystical experience that had them feel as though they were a part of a compassionate universe, a living universe.
Yes, I heard about that, right.
A mystical religious experience, 22% in 1962.
Mm-hmm.
Now, year by year, this is, you know, this has been asked again and again and again. So in 2010, instead of 22%, it has now grown to 49%.
Hmm. Is that right?
Which means that 48% said no, 49% said yes.
Right.
If you ask, have we reached a critical mass, I realize that's a statistical, it doesn't matter.
But we may be there, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying, and the critical mass comes not out of belief, but out of direct experience.
Yes.
When someone says, I have directly experienced the universe as a living system, and here's how I've experienced it, this way or that way or that way, but in some way it's not them thinking about it, it's them saying, this is a part of my lived experience. And at that point, you have a revolution underway. See
what
I'm saying?
Dwayne, let me share a little story with you, and I'd love your comment on it as to what this was. I think I know what it was, but I'd love to get your wise view of it. I live presently in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm originally from New York City. And 10 years ago, I was visiting my mom, who lives in Fort Lauderdale. And I was awoken at about 5 a.m. by the sound of birds singing outside. For some reason, birds have some real spiritual symbolic significance for me. But I was awoken by the birds, and I was in my pajamas, and I felt the need to go outside, not even to get dressed yet, but to go outside. The sun was barely rising. And I walked outside, but as I opened the door, Dwayne, I felt palpably that I was walking through a portal into another dimension. The topography didn't change. The houses outside were still there, and the palm trees and the other trees were still there. But you know what I felt? A glue. I felt a substance, subtle. Very, very subtle, and that this substance was holding everything together.
Mm-hmm.
I felt at one with the entire universe in that moment. And it was so profound and sacred that I literally, I'm sharing this, by the way, for the first time, I fell to my knees in gratitude to God for this moment.
Yes.
I will never forget that moment. I hope I experience many more of these moments.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. 49% of the folks by that survey listening would say, bless you, brother. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mm.
I walked through that portal to another dimension. I felt the glue that binds this universe together, and that glue is love. And and I now live in gratitude, knowing that that is the foundation of it all.
Right.
And then there are others that say, well, that's preposterous. You're crazy. You it's fantasy if you think that, you know.
Yes, right.
If you have not had that experience,
yes,
as far as you're concerned, it's just utter fantasy that
right.
that would exist.
Yes.
So a key part of all of this learning, I think, is tolerance and understanding that some people have fallen to their knees in gratitude and knowing, and others have not.
Right.
And that's just, you know, we're learning.
Dwayne, when 9/11 occurred and the Twin Towers fell, not just America, the entire world was shocked. Have you looked at this level of consciousness? By the way, I happen to be Jewish and the son of Holocaust survivors, so I grew up with a considerable amount of suppressed trauma, which I had to work through in my own therapy, but because there was so much pain that my parents could not express or reveal, there was a moment when it did happen, and it was a very cathartic moment for them. But the levels of consciousness amongst groups, amongst tribes, amongst various populations on Earth is quite varied. Wouldn't you agree? I'll tell you where I'm leading to. The extreme right-wing Islamic forces, of which Osama bin Laden is a leader, it seems to me that this is a level of consciousness that is extremely old and tribal and unforgiving, that it is a reflection of the forces of resistance, which inevitably, I believe, will go away, but the forces of resistance to change, to unification, to cultural progress. Have you ever thought about this, and do you have an opinion on this?
Yeah. Well, I just stepping back for a moment and looking at the dynamics of the world coming together right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have... you know, we have still have some Stone Age cultures. We're still finding a few.
Right.
We have about half the world that's still an agrarian world, a farming-based world.
Right, right.
And that farming world really is thousands of years old. It comes out of that a tribal kind of culture that you're speaking about,
mm-hmm.
and a seasonal kind of mindset where things just don't change. And then about the other half of the world is heavy into the urban, industrial, fast-paced. But then all of a sudden now in the last 10, 15 years, the entire world is being enveloped by this electronic infrastructure.
Yes.
So that if I go into India, even the poorest village is going to, someone's going to have that... that cell phone, you're going to look into the back of that hut with a dirt floor, they're going to have the blue light of the television set going in the back. And so
right.
we all of a sudden we have this an amazing amalgam coming together, and I think this is the most complex time of integration that the world will ever experience, because we have such an extraordinary range, genuinely, from agrarian to kind of the urban industrial to the communications era.
Right.
To the,
yeah.
Paradigms, the mindsets, the views of perceiving ourselves and what we're doing here that we've ever had in human history.
Right.
And it's in this generation that the that the convergence is happening.
So, it, within the context of your perspective, which is profound and hopeful. And looks towards some level of world unification and convergence. Am I putting words into your mouth, by the way, Dwayne?
You may be.
Well, how would you modify what I just said?
No, go ahead. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Okay. Do you hold these events, which are horrific and which seemingly take us steps back? You know, I mean, I'm also thinking of the Holocaust. You know, but how do you hold that? I would assume that you see this as part of the process of growth and convergence, and that these are the forces of resistance that are perhaps inevitable that we must contend with. Do you see it that way?
You know, Ed, I think...
And by the way, hold on just one moment.
Yes.
Is this... We have a caller. Is this Jack Nadel?
Hi, it is, but...
Hello, Jack.
Hi, how you doing?
Welcome to the show. I want to introduce you, Duane, to a friend of mine, a dear friend, Jack Nadel. Jack's from Santa Barbara. Jack's a very wise individual. He's an author of many books. And I want Duane to finish the comment, if he chooses to, and then ask Jack if he has any comment or question for Duane. Go ahead, Duane.
Well, you asked how do I hold an understanding of the dynamics of a world in transition?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that is with great difficulty. It would be like, where's the place of refuge from a world in climate change? It isn't just a region, it's the entire Earth. Where's the refuge from a world facing energy shortages that will impact the entire Earth, or species extinction, or water, and so on?
Right.
We are moving into what seems to me will be one of the most difficult periods in human history, because it's essentially the supreme test of our intelligence, our compassion as a species, to be able to pull together when every instinct otherwise might be to pull apart in conflict.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and so I think this will unless we're willing to look at the suffering and the sorrow that's going to go with this time of transition, we're going to pull apart in conflict. So this is a very, very challenging time to hold.
Jack, have you been listening to any part of this interview?
Unfortunately, Mike, I was listening. I started to listen at 4 o'clock, and I said, there's a miscommunication. I was listening to what I think was an old program with Cy Ginsberg.
Oh, my previous show. Okay.
Well, let me hear this a little bit more.
Okay. By the way, Duane is a futurist and a social visionary, Jack, and he has written his most recent major book is, I guess Voluntary Simplicity is the third edition. But before that, The Living Universe. He's written another book called Awakening Earth, and he speaks to the evolution of our species moving slowly sometimes, but inevitably towards a more peaceful world, and a more cooperative world, and a world that is converging. But on the other hand, he sees all of the many challenges. You just heard him describe some of these challenges.
Right.
I had invoked the name of Osama bin Laden. I was curious to know what Duane thought of terrorism in the face of the larger picture that he presents, the more hopeful picture. And of course, he has presented other problems like climate change and overpopulation and so on, energy shortages. I want to ask Jack, though. Duane, Jack is a decorated World War II pilot, and he has seen a lot in his life. In his own way, he's a philosopher himself. He's written a number of books, some of them with a philosophical bent. He's seen tremendous destruction of the human family. But are you, Jack, an optimist nonetheless, or how do you feel looking at the world as we all see it right now in somewhat of a perilous state?
No, unfortunately, I am not an optimist, but this evolutionary process, I wonder you know, how long it's going to take before we move into an extinct category. Are we talking, you know, since I'm 86, I don't, you know, I'd love to see the Earth survive another 1,000 years, but I don't know what where it's going because...
Are you worried, Jack? Are you worried about what you see?
Very much.
Yeah.
Very much. I have a... My faith is that something is going to come along that's going to take us out of this fossil fuel and the ecology and the offshore drilling and all the junk that's happening. And it's going to say, hey, wait a minute, guys, you're on the wrong path. But I just see so many things that keep repeating themselves. You talk about war. I mean, I was at war, but I'm a real, you know, I was a founder of the business people against the Vietnam War, and I'm still in a quandary over the fact that the same literature, the same sayings, the same reasons are cropping up, and I wonder, you know, if Rip Van Winkle went to wake up, would he find it much different than it was 50 years ago?
Duane, how do you feel about Jack's take on things right now?
Kelly, I don't. I think I completely agree with Jack. First of all, I'm certainly not an optimist in the sense that when I look at the trends that I've been looking at now for over 40 years professionally, population, resources, the environment, all the rest, I'm very much worried, just like Jack. And the worry to me is that we're not stepping up to the game here, that we have the talents, we have the skills, we know how to handle this.
Is it possible when the commercial incentive is to go the other way for us
you
to
bet.
Belly up?
That's right. And if we would simply apply the talents and the skills that we already have to this instead of, let's say, trying to so much going into weaponry and all the rest, we would have a different world. And I think terrorism, for example, so much of terrorism comes out of a sense of hopelessness and poverty. And I think we could begin to create rapidly not utopia, but a sense of possibility. People saying, hey, down the road, maybe a generation from now, but down the road, it's going to be a better world for us. And that's what I'm shooting for.
Duane, is someone like you, it's very interesting because I just got this, but it's kind of simple. Is someone, Jack, Duane is somebody who puts into the world books that offer hope, that offer a larger picture of what can be. They are not silly utopian visions. They make sense, but they are clearly, we are not in a place yet where they have been realized. And so by the virtual act of positing these images into the world, we help co-create that world. That's my take on this. But having said that, you, Duane, recognize that we're not there yet.
Oh, no. No,
and
well,
that we
no.
And you are a realist as well as an idealist. Would that be correct to say?
Very much. You know, I grew up on a farm, and you got to be very much a realist if year after year you're going to be a farmer and really watch how the crops grow and how nature really works, and you can't pretend about that. So what I look around, what I see is a world that essentially is in its adolescence. It's teenage years. It's kind
right.
of acting it out that way. And we're going to go through this rite of passage just like teenagers do all around the world. And we're gonna use up more water and soil and oceans and all the rest than we should. And then hopefully we're going to grow up. And we're in that transition.
How is this going to happen when you have this disaster in the Gulf and the people are petitioning to drill more oil wells because that's the way they make their living.
That's right. Exactly. And I think that even more of that's going to happen. More of that's going to happen until it gets so bad that people are going to say enough. And I don't know when that's going to be, but we've got a ways to go yet, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Jack, you have seen the worst of humanity. Do you think we have the wherewithal, even in the face of the crises that we create for ourselves, to overcome that level of mentality, of consciousness, and go to another level? Before you came on, Duane and I were talking about the possibility or likelihood that we either are, there either is or we are about to experience a critical mass of people who care about the earth and who want humanity to work. And I guess I would ask that question, if we're there or almost there, Duane, is that going to be the trigger mechanism to get us through?
The forces against that are so overpowering that I don't know. I think it's like a race. At what point will we evolve into a society where people will stop listening to nonsense and look at the reality and start to say, yeah, we are destroying this thing. And but there's the immediate thing. It's how do I put food on the table tonight?
That's right.
And that's the force that works against us. And as long as we keep spending billions of dollars on publicizing, there was enough motion pictures and literature that have told us that this is going to happen. But I don't know where the stopping point is, and where this turns a corner.
Jack, I completely agree. My feeling is, and I've spent 10 years as a community activist around media, and in my sense, power in a democracy is the power to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't communicate, you're powerless. And if you look in our society, the average person watches roughly 4 hours of television a day.
Right.
Television.
I thought it was more.
And but nonetheless, we watch more than 1 billion person hours each day of television. And the interesting thing is, internet time is not cutting into TV time. It's cutting into family time.
Interesting. Yeah.
But here's the point. Power in a democracy is the power to communicate. And if we genuinely want to take back power from either the corporate sector or the government sector or whatever sector is whatever lobby sector, if we as citizens in metropolitan areas actually want the power to communicate, we can do that by going in and taking back the public airwaves, and that's ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox. And I've spent 10 years doing that, and we own the airwaves at the community level. Not nationally, but community by community. Seattle, Philadelphia, Chicago, each community owns its own airwaves. And anytime
have you seen new programming emerge, Duane, as a result of a community takeover?
We created an electronic town meeting in the San Francisco Bay Area that was seen by over 300,000 people.
In the Bay Area.
In the Bay Area.
Right.
And the key thing was we had 6 interactions with a scientific sample of Bay Area citizens during the course of that hour. So we knew how the public, again and again and again and again, we knew how the public felt. It wasn't just some kind of knee-jerk response, and it was a scientific sample. And so it was like, this is gold in for politics, is to actually know. And so the power for a community to talk back to a governor, to a senator, to a president, the power to do that is there right now, and power in a democracy is the power to communicate. And any time we want to take that power back, we can have it. And as Jack says, though, we're not ready. We're just kind of sitting around here on our hands waiting for things to get worse. But when we finally are ready for it, we have the tools all around us, we have the skills all around us, and we can move ahead.
I wrote an article, Duane, Jack, I don't know if you've seen it. It was posted on the Huffington Post, entitled Why We Need to Transform Television.
I did not.
If you go into Huffington Post and just put my name in the Huffington search engine, Mike Schwager, you'll find five or six articles, but you'll see that one, Why We Need to Transform Television. And I open with the lead, it's not just that the medium is the message, but the medium and its messages are powerful imprinters on the human psyche.
Very much.
And so we have the power, with intentionality, to change. You know, I tried to launch a spiritual television channel in the early 90s. I hope I can still get there. But the powers of opposition were then, and I believe now, very great because of money and greed.
Right.
And catering to the lowest common denominator, which in their old paradigm experience is the way to make money.
Yeah,
that's why you're on my team now.
Yes.
The opposition is greed, and it's very tough to overcome it, and particularly when in the cases where it's misguided on the part of people who believe they have to live in a polluted Louisiana in order to make a living.
And not
only that, they have to work on the offshore drilling, because that's the major provider of jobs.
I tell you, the Gulf oil incident, the Gulf oil incident really breaks my heart, especially with respect to with the wildlife, the beautiful dolphins and whales and pelicans. It's a heartbreak, and it's a sin against nature, don't you think, Duane?
Well,
I'm using a harsh word, but what else would you call it?
It is, what comes up for me is a sense of like, well, what have we done? You know, the sense of shame, because we know we're killing off huge amounts of wildlife, and there's just a sense of shame that goes with that, of a sense of sorrow. Like, I'm sorry
totally.
This happened.
Absolutely.
It's all the same problem, though. The coal mine disaster was because they didn't put in safety equipment. The offshore drilling disaster with British Petroleum, because they didn't want to spend the money, because they'd rather put the money to the bottom line. And I'm a card-carrying capitalist. But
but all these companies, like Massey, with respect to the coal mining disaster, and BP, don't you think that there needs to be a paradigm shift with respect to how to do business, and that the focus needs to really focus on humane capitalism, on treating people as people, not as commodities? There's an old paradigm called the transactional paradigm. There's a new paradigm. McGregor Burns fostered it. And also Warren Ennis, which has to do with transforming companies from the inside out by developing.
May I introduce a completely new idea?
Well, what do you think first before you do, Jack? Before you do, what do you think of that concept?
I think profits
can soar still.
You're going into a poker game with a stack deck. As long as the profitability of the corporation depends on the bottom line, they're going to stint, and they're going to spend tons of billions of dollars to persuade the Congress to vote along with them.
Because they don't know that there's a better way. Treat your people like human beings and develop their human potential, and you'll see productivity and profit soar. It's been done.
How about if we make it profitable to do the right thing? Well, how about there's a company that went on the stock market yesterday called Tesla, which is a totally powered electronic car. And it went on the market. It opened at $17, I think. It closed the same day at $25.
Right.
And
well, that has to do with innovation and ingenuity, right?
And as a card-carrying capitalist, I went in and bought stock because
right.
because not only I bought it because I want the electronic car to go and I want to get off the fossil fuel.
Right, I agree with that 100%.
But I want to put my money into those kind of industries.
Absolutely, absolutely.
This is my other thought.
Right.
That it you're not just being noble, but it's profitable.
Right. Well taken, Jack. But your point and my point don't need to conflict with each other. They can work together.
No, of course not.
Dwayne, we only have 9 minutes left. And
by the way,
Jack, I want to thank you so much. You've enlivened this conversation. You're terrific. But Dwayne, I want to, and please stay there, Jack. I want to just briefly pursue what you call a number of equally powerful opportunity trends. This is a quote from you.
I would like to comment on what you and Jack were just speaking about very briefly.
Oh, sure. Please.
And it is the idea that we do live in a world dominated by a marketplace kind of mentality right now. And the marketplace is fierce, as Jack understands, in terms of what profit-making generates.
Uh-huh.
And if the world is going to survive, we need to think more of ourselves instead of a market, as a family. Because family doesn't chew on itself quite so harsh and fierce as the marketplace does. And the thing that is currently transforming the marketplace into a family place globally is the internet. And the reason
yes.
it's doing so is because it's making every market transparent and it's giving it a history. And if your company does things that are shady or that are of compromised ethics and this and that, you've got a history, then it's going to be global and the world's going to know about it. And all of a sudden, you're part of the family, like it or not, and that
right.
is shifting the ethics.
Wayne, I think that's a brilliant observation.
Okay. So go ahead. You were going to say something else.
No, I wanted to give time to a few of your ideas in the book on the positive side. We've talked about the dilemmas, we only have a few minutes, but I'd love to hear from you on, first, there is the idea of a living universe. Science has traditionally regarded the universe as non-living at its foundations, but it's extraordinary that now at the frontiers of science, we're beginning to find out that the universe itself is functioning as if it were a living system. The other idea is that consciousness appears to be present at every level of the universe, from the atomic scale on up through the human scale, so the universe has the properties of a living system. Life exists within life. And this is an amazing miracle, and as we discover this, this is you writing, Dwayne, I think that it is going to begin to shift who we think we are and what we think our life journey is about. It's transformative.
Right.
That is a wonderful expression. Do you want to develop it a little further?
Well, okay, first of all, we've already spoken about how essentially a half of the adult population would listen to this and say, well, of course it's alive. That's how
right,
I've already had
right.
that experience.
Right.
I don't need to be convinced about that.
Right.
And so then the question is, well, so what? And one of the first so whats is people say, well, look, I get it that what matters is the quality of my life experience, not the amount of stuff I've got.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my experience of my relationship to nature, my experience with my family and other close relationships, my sense of aliveness when I'm giving generously to the world, the quality of my workmates and my experience there, and
the sense that we are all connected to life and to each other.
That is the connection.
Separation is an illusion in some ways, so that would be a direction in consciousness to move towards and encourage, right?
Yeah, so people would say, wait a minute, I'm putting my attention into things and stuff and where the juice of life is actually in the quality of those relationships and those connections.
Right.
And so we would say, wait, I'm misdirecting all of my energy, not all, but some significant portion of my energy and attention from where I really get satisfaction and meaning in my life.
Yes.
And so I think that's one area that's already beginning to shift as we see people say, well, it's more the non-material aspects of life that matter. And then people say, well, look, I must have a bigger story here than the amount of stuff I pile up. I'm not just my pile of stuff. I'm something, this juice of aliveness inside.
Right.
So then people say, well, I think I'm going to go off and explore that aliveness as opposed to pile up a bigger pile of stuff.
Yes.
And so you see what I'm saying? You begin to veer individually and socially in an entirely different direction.
And Dwayne, the point about the next opportunity trend, I just wanted to get two in before we close, is the emergence of simpler ways of living that put less stress on the earth. Dwayne wrote a lovely book, this is the third edition, called Voluntary Simplicity. So in just literally a minute, Dwayne, can you share with the audience a little bit more about that?
The essence is it's not about living so much with less as it is with living with balance and living with purpose. And once we're really clear about what our purpose is here in life, we can then live with balance, and then out of that balance comes a life of simplicity.
What do you think, Jack?
I think it's a very good and very sound concept. I think it I look at this almost, Dwayne, like a race between what you're talking about and the negatives.
Indeed.
I hope our side wins.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jack.
And I hope you live to see some of it, Jack.
I do.
In the limited time left, Dwayne, give the viewers your website address and any other information you'd like to give.
Yes, my website is called awakeningearth.org. Starts with an A, so it's awakeningearth.org, all one word. And there's a lot of free material there, both videos. There's a number of videos on the website.
Right.
Short ones, 3 to 5 minutes. And then there's a lot of written material there as well.
Wonderful. And Jack Nadel, you have several websites. Is there one you'd like to give to the listeners?
Just the easiest one to remember would be Jack Nadel, JACK.Nadel.com.
Very good, JackNadel.com. Well, Dwayne, thank you so much. I mean, it's hard to believe we did an hour, don't you think? It's kind of amazing that the hour went by so quickly.
Well.
Dwayne, thank you so much. God bless
you. You're
very welcome. All the best to you, Dwayne. And Jack,
thank you,
what can I say, my friend? God bless you, and thank you so much for participating.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
You're both terrific. Thank you.
Right. Take care, Jack.
Well, you too, Dwayne.
Okay.
I'll be on your website.
All right.
Okay. Take care, both of you. We are now in the last few seconds of this broadcast, and I want to thank Dwayne Elgin, wonderful interview, and I want to thank Jack Nadel, a wonderful call-in contributor. If any of you would like to reach me, the best way is Mike Maven, M-I-K-E, M-A-V as in Victor, E-N, Mike Maven, at Comcast.net. As some of you may know, aside from doing my radio show and aside from being editor-in-chief of Enrichment.com, I'm also president of WorldLink Media Consultants, publicity, television, interview training to prepare spokespeople for going on TV, and speech writing. So I'd be happy to consult with you if you have any of those needs. God bless you. I'm glad to be back, and have a wonderful day, week, month, and year. Bye now.
When you wish upon
star makes no